I like to think of my job in a way that I get meaning from the things I do. Like there should be meaning. If even if you're using a framework, make sure there's meaning within the framework that is meaningful for you at that moment in the process, not that you are doing because you're following a recipe.
Everyone, welcome to the next episode of Pixelated Perfect. I'm super excited. I have with me Denise, Denny for short. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Perfect, perfect. So super excited to have you on the podcast. I wanted to give a quick overview for everyone, kind of some of her background and what we'll be talking with Denny about. So Denny is a lead product designer for Mural right now, which is really awesome. Based in Buenos Aires, she has over 6 years of experience in digital product design and a strong background in graphic design. She has successfully led projects from start to finish while collaborating with cross-functional teams to come up with impactful outcomes, which I'm curious to learn a little bit more about. She looks to build meaningful relationships with her team and stakeholders and is advocating for diversity and inclusion to foster a culture of respect and openness. So thank you so much for being here, Denny. I'm super excited to talk a little bit more about design and your background.
Thank you, Diane, for the opportunity, for having me here.
Of course. So let's get started. I have some just like basic design questions for you. Something I like to start these interviews with is the question of what does a designer mean to you?
Well, I think of design in the most broad way possible. I think design is how we shape the world we live in. Maybe that's because of my background, because I studied graphic design, but in Buenos Aires at my university, the same campus, is the building where they teach industrial design, architecture, like all the design disciplines. And I was always very interested on how they connect or relate to each other. So I think of design, like the creating the systems or the tools that support our experience or mediate our experience. So design is everywhere today, yes. Especially with digital products. Nowadays, we use digital products for everything, for communications, like to express our feelings, to book something for a trip. So all our desires, our thinking, our actions are put into digital products. And I think that's what I love about my role.
Yeah, I love that. I think that you said it really well. Like design is everywhere, everywhere we look, everything we do. And especially today with technology, it's like always at our fingertips. There's never a moment where there's not some form of design, a digital product that we're like interacting with in some way, whether it's like digital billboard or on our phones or in our ears. Like there's always some kind of something that if you think about everything that you see is like someone designed that, someone put a group, a team of people put that together. And so I always find that fascinating to think about like everything we see today, there is like a whole strategy and a whole process around building it.
Yes, if you think of design system as like the concept or the tool, it frames like this design thinking as like a mindset, right? That you can apply to different disciplines. So you're like asking questions, trying to understand problems, going through these moments of divergence or conversions. So the design process to me is something that can be applied to pretty much everything and brings more ideas into the table. It's always will enrich any process or any experience.
Yes. A follow-up question to that, because I think this is interesting, is there's like a lot of workshops that I've done with teams where maybe there's not a designer in the room, maybe they're a developer, maybe they're like a marketing person, and they're like, oh, I don't know how to draw. Like, I can't be in this meeting. I don't know how to do this workshop. What do you say to those people?
First, I think everyone can draw, but that maybe that's because I was a drawing teacher at university. And so for newcomers, for all the design careers, we have this drawing class in the first year. And there was this fear in many students, like, I can't draw, because someone told them at some point that they weren't good for drawing. Right. But the way I think of drawing is like a way of, a tool for thinking, because when you draw, you're having a conversation with the thing you are drawing. So it's like you enter a feedback loop with your drawing and you start thinking or getting more ideas from the things you're drawing. So I think of drawing as a way to visualize ideas. So it can be adding a sticky note, can be like drawing or visually reflecting or keeping track of an idea or iterating on it and sharing it with others. That's how I think drawing. That's why I think everyone can draw. Drawing comes in many ways. I like to think like of it in a very poetic way. For instance, dancing to me is like drawing in the space. It's like how I understand a drawing in space. But besides the poetic side, I think there's something very powerful in expressing our ideas visually, because it's a great way of communicating these ideas and sharing them with others. So I will send my developer friends that they can draw.
Right. And I love what you said. It's like when you're drawing, it's like you're entering a feedback loop. It is this like conversation you're having with your brain, but you're like outputting something. So it's like a continuous loop of getting out a thought or an idea onto a piece of paper and having that feedback loop with you, and then having something to show people so that they can help understand this concept in your head.
Yes, it's similar to what happened with design prototypes when you want to test or validate something, right? You build a prototype because you have questions that you need to answer. And depending on those questions is what's the type of prototype you decide to build. But it's not only like you start learning not only when you put it in front of people, but also in the process of making it. Like it's like the prototype or any design artifact brings new conversation, brings new questions to the table. So you start realizing what are the other questions you will need to answer. So the design process has this beautiful thing to me that is that you are all the time learning. That should be like the approach or the attitude. That's the attitude I like to have about the design work we do. That we start with a few assumptions and some ideas, and then we have to validate as much as possible, or actually as much as needed, because you don't need to validate everything. Sometimes you can also take risks. It really depends on the risks you have to mitigate. But I think that's a beautiful process. When you realize you are wrong, you have the wrong assumptions. When you collaborate with others, and that's what I like to involve developers early on the design process, because they always will see things from a different point of view because of their background. And that's very interesting, because it always brings new questions, like what will happen with performance when we release this feature and like 100 people use it at the same time, because our platform handles like real-time collaboration. And there are so many edge cases that you can never think of all of them. You learn on the go.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love that. I love how you define like the process, and I definitely agree with everything you said. I thought something interesting you said was taking risks, and how like there's a lot of assumptions and you can test and mitigate some of those, but sometimes it's important to take those risks. And I really like how you said that, because I think that's like, I think a big part of our role as a designer is to come up with new ideas and new concepts, and like, how can we push the boundaries of specific things? And without us to push those boundaries or other people to push those boundaries, you might get stuck in the same loop. And so where do we decide to take those risks and to build that thing that maybe has not been completely validated? And how do we know how to make those decisions of what to take risks on?
Oh, that really depends on the product, on your users, on the impact it could have. It depends on a lot of things. What, like, if it's like a one-way door decision that you cannot revert, that's very risky. But it's something that you can change later and it won't impact like the rest of the experience, then that's different. There are so many things to consider. I don't know if I have a clear answer for that. I think every time needs to be discussed. Like, every project has requires different approaches. And yeah, you really need to have this critical thinking to understand what's the best process. What are the steps you cannot miss? What are the questions you have to answer first? What could be answered later? Because right. You also need to be mindful of the effort you are doing, because we have limited time and resources. That applies for every company. Or what's the smartest use of our time? Because there's a market, there are competitors that are also releasing features. So sometimes you have time pressure, sometimes you are looking for quality. It really depends on the strategy. That's where I think design meets the business needs, not yes. only the user needs. And we have to adjust a bit depending on that context. Because of course, as designers of the user experience, we advocate for the user. And we always look for quality and we try to be user-centric, because we want to make an impact and deliver value for the user. But also we are part, we cannot be naive. We are part of a company. So we have to support that business as well. And there are a lot of trade-offs. We make decisions all the time, but those decisions have trade-offs. I think of designers as the owners of the design decisions, but more in a way that we drive the decision-making process. It's not that we make decisions on our own. We facilitate the conversations that need to happen at certain points to align, to have agreement, to have, to get buy-in from stakeholders, or also to engage with your team and understand, yeah, this is an important problem we are solving. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of leading and a lot of, to me, storytelling, for instance, is a great skill for designers. Because when you're driving this process, you need to start with a compelling problem framing. People can feel empathy for the user and understand that's the problem we want to solve and that's the right problem and why we need to solve it. There's a lot of passion in that part of the process that is great to share with others. And then I think of, like, we have to be very strategic on what we do in every phase. At Mira, at least the product designer starts in the first research or discovery or problem framing phase, and we go through all the design process until the delivery. So each phase requires different approaches or skills.
Right. No, thank you. That was, I love what you said about storytelling and meeting business needs. I think that's like a lot of, I think, more junior designers are people thinking about the design. They don't always think about like all of these other aspects of being a designer. So I think you explained that very well. And I have a question talking about Mural is like, so you're a lead designer and you said you kind of go through this whole process from like start to end, which is great. But I'm sure listeners out there are curious, like how do you go about facilitating some of these conversations, and what does that team structure look like, and how do you kind of fit in with the full business side of things?
Well, there was a project that may help as an example that was tables, because we were working on this feature to to support, to have a table functionality or a table tool that lives within the canvas, the mirrored canvas, which is an infinite canvas. So it's a table, but it's living in a context where the rules are a bit different.
Yeah.
And we had this feature as a top feature request, our users asking, we want tables, we want tables. So yeah, let's build tables. But the question we had to answer first is, it was, what do they mean by a table in Mirror? What are they gonna use the table for? What's the real problem that the table will solve for them? Because I'm pretty sure that when they say table, they don't mean like a spreadsheet, or it's like, what's the concept or the mental model around that table that will live inside a visual thinking tool, which is a completely different thing, right?
Right.
How many rows, like, are you gonna manage like the data on that table and expect to have formulas? Like, what's the real use case for that table?
Right.
So we started by doing interviews with users and asking them and trying to learn from their workflows and their use cases, what were their workarounds, because they didn't have these tools, but they were doing a lot of hacks with the tools we had at that moment. And still, it was very hard for us to understand what was the expected interaction, because it's not a very standard solution in a way. It's not something that you find everywhere, a table within an infinite canvas.
Right.
And I remember that at that moment, we realized of the complexity that this project was going to have. So I created a video with a problem framing that was very, very compelling. Like, I made sure I had like a great storytelling in that presentation. So every time I had to introduce someone new to that project, I would send that video, like a 6-minute video explaining why are we doing this? What did we learn from the users? What are the hacks they are doing? What's the expected functionality? Even though we didn't know the scope at that moment, right? Because when you start with the problem, you're trying to understand it in the most broad way, and you're not trying to limit the way you think about the solution, but to reflect a bit of that complexity, we were saying, like, these are table stakes. Like, this is functionality that has to be even in the first version. And creating that alignment and that agreement, and also that engagement with the project, was the structure that sustained the engagement across a year, because that project lasted a year. And I was leading that in the middle, the team changed, the stakeholders map changed. So every time we were like going back to the initial problem framing. And that's why it was so valuable for me, investing at that moment, doing the research, and also sharing the research with the rest of the team. And also, I remember the interviews we did. Something that was great was, yeah, invite your developers to the interviews, because then they have a different feeling. It's not that you are sharing the story of something you learn from the users, but the user is like an abstract thing. It's not a real person. But if they attend at least one of those interviews, they are so much engaged and commit to solving the problem for them that it's amazing. That's like a trick. That's something I will always like repeat every time I start a new project.
Yeah. No, that was great. I think that like some takeaways that I've taken, especially for other designers listening, is like framing the problem and like making it a compelling story of why people should be interested in solving this problem is huge. And I think a lot of people like rush into so many other stages of a project. But the value of this early work is like defining a problem is so important. How can you find solutions if you don't even know exactly what the problem is that the user's finding? So you're like, just take a big step back and just like, what in general are we solving? Because yeah, it's more complex. I think a lot of people are like, oh, it's really straightforward. This is what we need, X, Y, Z. But then if you like uncover the actual problem that a user is facing, it's usually way more complicated than like the initial idea that's being thrown around. I love what you said at the end too, is like I think that having working more in a collaboration and like where everyone is doing some form of research, even if like it's a developer, project manager, doesn't matter. Like if everyone is invested in the full process and it's not like siloed, that's when you're going to get the best work. And that's where everyone really does care about the problem that you're solving and is really involved through the whole process. So I think that's really powerful. I think a lot of companies are not structured that way. There's like these silos of, okay, first the researcher, then the designer, then the developer, and everyone kind of works separately.
Yes, there's this idea that the designer creates the solution and bring it, and then the engineers develop it. And it's not like that. It's right the opposite. In the ideation phase, we have to involve them because sometimes they have the best ideas because how they understand the product. Because I don't know, maybe at Mirror, a lot of developers are fans of video games. They bring ideas from other industries that I cannot think of on my own. And they, when they are involved, they have a better understanding of what we are building. So they are mindful of the user and the experience and the solution, and that reduces a lot of work in the future, like on writing down specs, for instance, that which is very time consuming and sometimes can be boring. But if you have a shared understanding of the thing you are building, you create that shared knowledge. And then you don't have to rely that much on that authority, or like the designer is the one who has all the answers, and right. We need to reach out to them every time we have a question because this edge case is not defined here. So you start building criteria with your team. That's amazing. Well, when that happens, because you can have more autonomy, you can have more velocity, you can take more risks. Yeah.
Well said. Oh my gosh, I love it. So I have a question for you about this concept of Mural of the Infinite Board, because that's not like something a lot of people are familiar with. I guess now there's a lot more, but I feel like from my understanding, you guys are one of the first that like created this infinite canvas. And how did you get to that concept? Like, how can you communicate like an infinite canvas?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Like, how can you communicate that canvas, how the users understand it? Or
yeah, how, like how
the
do
designers
approach
it?
Yeah. I guess both. I was actually thinking of it more from a user perspective, is like they're like, oh, like I can literally just keep going. Like, what's the value of that for a user, and how can they like, because that's like a big selling point. I think it's like you collaborate and you have this canvas, you can just keep moving around. You don't have to have like new canvases. So how do you communicate that to users, and how, I guess, yeah, do you design for that too?
Definitely has a lot of challenges in terms of the structure of the content, the way you navigate the content, the way you interact with the elements, because there are so many layers, like the content in the canvas, the objects that you manipulate, but also the UI on top of that, and a lot of contextual information, a lot of metadata. So the collaborators that are with you in the same mural. I know it's hard for new users to understand when they don't have experience with a tool like that. And that sometimes they perceive it as a tool for designers or a very specialized tool that they will need to learn or invest a lot of time in learning. So, we are working all the time on improving the onboarding experience or communicating how that infinite canvas works. It wasn't always like that. It was limited at some point, and then we made it infinite. But even with the limited one, it was very hard to understand the scale of the elements, because you can zoom or you can enlarge the elements, but it was hard to understand like what was happening there. I think we still have a lot of work to do in that regards, like the scale of the elements in the mural. There are relationships between all of them, and they work as a system, and they have a cohesive size and scale depending on the type of object and the job it's going to solve for the user. Because, for instance, there are good practices with the sticky notes. Like a sticky note should be a very concise and short idea that you can summarize in one sentence. So that drives like how we design this sticky note. And yeah, those constraints, I think, help because they are guidelines for how to use the tool. But yeah, it's a different thinking style. But when they realize how it worked, there's like a wow moment, a wow effect when they see the value of the tool. That is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think like a bit like thinking about tables that we were talking about originally or sticky notes, it's like those come from other, like a sticky note is like most people know what a sticky note is and they've used it in their real like physical life. And so by translating this concept of a sticky note to like an infinite canvas, it's like there's, you're still trying to like provide a pattern that people are somewhat familiar with. So there's like that interaction and that way of communicating.
Yes, and there's the question of how far do you want to take that metaphor from the real world to help the affordances of the tools and help people understand how they work, and when that metaphor starts limiting what you can do on a digital environment, which has way more capabilities. So there's a decision, something to balance there that is very interesting. But using metaphors from the real world is very, very helpful. If you think like on a facilitator or someone guiding a workshop or a collaborative session in the real world, in a room, and they ask everyone to write something down on their own sticky and then share it on the wall, right? You think of that moment when they write, that's like a private moment for them. It's not that everyone is reading what the others are doing. But in the mural, we had everything exposed all the time because that was how the tool worked. If you type, others will see in real time what you are typing. So at some point we encountered there were issues with psychological safety. Like I want to work on my own. I don't want people read like what I'm writing down and until I decide I'm ready to share it. And we are finding digital ways of solving those things, sometimes emulating physical scenarios and sometimes thinking of new ideas. We at that moment, I remember we were doing a research on agile use cases. And the, for instance, for agile ceremonies like retrospectives, sometimes people need to talk about sensitive topics or express things that need more, more elaboration on more space for them to write down these ideas. So we work on the private mode feature that allows you to write and nobody can read what you're writing until there's like this reveal moment where all the content is revealed at the same time and you can see what others write. That's a conversation we have very often. I mean, when do we want to use the metaphor from the real world and when we look for other ideas for innovation.
Right. And I think this is a great example of us talking about like, it seems simple. Like, it's just like from the real world, you take a sticky note and you're like, yeah, but how far can you take it? And that's such a great example of there's so much more that it is in a designer's or not even a product's mission is to like think about all of these problems that we're solving and really go deep. And so I was like, oh my gosh. And then I was like, what if the sticky note in the real world, it's like, it's unsticky. Like, how do you do that on a digital canvas? Like, of course, that's probably not necessary. But yeah, like, where do you draw the line? It's really fascinating to think about.
What is very interesting to me is that these tools, different tools allows or support different thinking styles. So when you're trying to think of an idea, it is different, right? Trying to draw it or trying to write down sticky notes, putting the sticky in a very structured way, like a table and having like these clear areas or moving just things around in a freeform way or connecting things, ideas with arrows. I'm very passionate about that, or also color coding, any visual support to visualize or understand and share ideas. I'm very passionate about that, and I'm very happy to work at that part of the product because Mural is a big platform. It's not only the experience in the canvas, it also has integrations, like a dashboard where you can find your content and navigate your murals. Like, there are many aspects of the product, but the canvas to me is like thinking the tools themselves. That's very powerful because that's how we support people doing their work.
For facilitation, you're kind of like, this is kind of passion. Do you have a specific process? Do you like to follow like design thinking? Do you like to do the Google process? Like, what's your favorite workshop methods?
I think we follow the design thinking method, where we make sure we go through the divergence phase and we get all the ideas and then converge. And that's something we never miss. We never take shortcuts on that, the diversion phase. And I'm not a super, I don't know, I'm not like a frameworks person. I always struggle with recipes, even for cooking. It's hard for me to cook the same dish, like the same meal twice and do it the same way. I always need to change something just a little bit. I think that frameworks are great, but also it shouldn't be the framework per se, like, I don't know, the framework for the framework.
Right.
So that's where critical thinking is key. So you design, you own the design process. You have to design what's the next step. And maybe you have like, it's great to have frameworks at hand that you can bring in when you need it. But you always have to be clear what's the question you need to answer, what's the decision you need to make, who do you want to involve, and how do you want to do it. It's very contextual, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. This made me think of AI, ChatGPT, obviously, is like the thing right now. The world is changing because of it. And as I've been playing more with it, I realize that it's more of a tool to like, there's never like I guess it's like the prompts. It's like, how much more, how do you learn? How can you take your learnings from something you asked ChatGPT yesterday and maybe tweak something so that you get a better answer? And so I think it's always like, yeah, like critical thinking, like how can you like not just repeat the same patterns over and over and expect like different results? How can you keep pushing the boundaries and keep thinking about how can you get the best answers for you, or how can you take what they gave you and turn it into something else? And so I think it's always like diving a little deeper and changing things slightly to see like what happens from it and the differences that you get from it and a learning, I guess, always.
Yes, that's like an experimentation mindset, right?
Right.
If you think of a design project as an experiment, that's very helpful. You don't have all the pressure to make the right decisions, know everything in advance. You are learning, and by learning you build a thing, and at the end you end up with something that hopefully adds value. That's our goal. But you also learn a lot in the meantime. So to me, I like to think of my job in a way that I get meaning from the things I do. Like, there should be meaning. If you're using a framework, make sure there's meaning within the framework that is meaningful for you at that moment in the process, not that you are doing because you're following a recipe.
Yes. Well said. It's kind of like when you're cooking and you have to taste, you should be tasting it along the way and decide what you need to change, instead of just like doing it and then you get to the final result and you're like, oh, I should have put more salt in at the beginning. Like, if you're thinking of it as an experiment and testing along the way, you're going to get there.
Yeah, exactly.
So one of the last kind of concepts I wanted to ask you about was collaboration. Obviously, Mural is a huge tool for collaboration, especially during COVID. Like, obviously, people's need to collaborate in a space together remotely kind of blew up. And so this is kind of a broad question, but like, what are the biggest challenges you as a designer have faced with building a tool for collaboration?
That's a good question. We have this facilitator role, you know, that has become more popular during the last years. It's like a formalized role where someone takes the lead and guides a session and uses, maybe they are the experts in using Mural and using the features to guide people through the activities. But I also noticed that lately, sometimes you don't have a clear facilitator person who will take care of everything and will make the perfect workshop or the perfect session. Sometimes it's like your teammates trying to guide a conversation and get like outcomes to get to agreement, or like we are thinking on how might we support everyone in this role trying to guide this conversation, and how Mural can be the platform that allows those conversations to happen in a more horizontal way, collaborative way. There are some interesting mechanisms in the digital world. For instance, if you run a voting session, right, in you vote on the ideas in a Mural, that's very horizontal, and that way you prevent maybe from people taking all the space because they are more charismatic and they talk more or they speak more out loud, so you can hear all the voices. And also we are thinking more on how we communicate non-verbally, which is a huge part of our communication. How can we translate that into the Canvas experience through like sending reactions in real time or reacting to the content in the Canvas? Those type of moments help collaboration, help people express ideas, express how they feel. We try to think a lot of how can we create psychological safety so people feel willing to express their ideas. And also how we bring some joy into the product, because collaboration is also about engagement, being present, sharing what you think, entering this flow sometimes where you are like bringing more ideas and getting inspired from others. So there's a lot of that. Also like finding opportunities to bring small delighters. So maybe you end a session and you can celebrate and there's confetti on the screen and you create this moments of engagement, because working remotely is hard. I mean, it's awesome. I love staying at home with my pets and working with people across the world, but sometimes you feel a bit isolated. There's a big issue with teams that are disconnected or not working as effectively as they could, because this is still new for us, learning, and we adapted very fast, but there are a lot of things from the human experience that can be still potentiated in the digital environments.
No, for sure. I feel like it's funny now, because I have been working remotely so much and my team's remote, is like, if we do get together in person, I find us still like using Mural or using Figma. Like we still get on our computers and do the workshops instead of like getting an actual sticky note. We're like, oh, we don't have time to go to the store and get a sticky note. So I think it's interesting also how to like think about facilitating like in-person collaborations through technology as well, because I feel like a lot of people use it in that sense too.
Yes, well, being digital first has a lot of advantages. If you start your work and your work is already digitalized, then you can extract, like process that information, transform it into something else. It has, yeah, it's very powerful. So it's great that we are taking advantage of those capabilities. And yeah, collaboration is key for success. We talk a lot about empathy. We talk about empathy for the user, right, in design, product design. But I also think that empathy should be applied to your colleagues, to understand who you collaborate with, to be successful on the things you do. You have to understand who is working with you and what do they need from you. How can you also make them successful? We have it as a company value that is my favorite one, that is make others successful. And that's like a value I really try to embody. So when I think of writing design specs, I think what's the best way for my engineers to write, to read and go through these specs in a way that it's not like very time consuming, it's easy to find the information, it's engaging, they understand why, the why behind the decisions. So, or if I work with my PM, I want to understand what are their concerns, what are the things that are creating pressure or that are stressing her or that are, I don't know. There are so many things happening for people. We are all humans and trying to do our best. That when you start having, applying that empathy for your colleagues, it gets to better results. But also empathy to me, it's hard because it could be a bit controversial in the way that sometimes you it's easier to have empathy for people who you share the same background with or have feel closer.
Yeah.
So that has a lot of bias. We need to be very careful with that. But yeah, having some, bringing your sensitivity or your human self to work.
Yeah, I think that was so beautifully said. I feel like that's such a big part of, it's like we're all just here, like getting by, right? Like be gentle. You never know what other people are experiencing. And yeah, like how can you make everyone's experience as seamless and easy as possible, whether it's like with your colleagues or you're building a product or like in general, like how can you be empathetic? Which is really interesting, especially when you think about other cultures and like, what does empathy mean to them? What kind of cultural differences are present that you don't even recognize that are causing someone else to feel uncomfortable? It's like endless.
When I started working at Mural, my job required that I speak English, and I was just learning. I didn't know English. I couldn't have like a fluid conversation. So it was very hard for me the first 3 or 6 months because I was being onboarded to the company and to the product, but also I was learning the language to communicate with my colleagues and with my users. And I was like, I will start every meeting with this disclaimer, like, please be mindful, I'm like, English is my second language, or can you repeat that? Can you say it? Like, I was so obsessed with this. It was very hard for me, but everyone was so empathetic and helped me so much that I'm very thankful for that. And that's something that puts you in a position to understand everyone is going through different things. But everyone has so much to bring so much value to bring, especially from different backgrounds. When you have diversity, it's very valuable for a team to have this type of diversity and to give space for everyone to develop, to learn. Creating this environment for everyone to succeed.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel like you having that experience definitely like put you in a whole different mindset of how to like tackle challenges. Like you experienced something that, I mean, not only were you starting a new job and onboarding, you were learning a whole new language. Like I can't even imagine how exhausting every day had to have been for you at the beginning. That's yeah.
There was a fun story. I will share it shortly because the first interviews I had to do with users, I wasn't very good at English, so I practiced the questions like a script. So I was prepared for asking the questions. That was it. And then when the users started answering, I couldn't understand what they were saying. I was so nervous, and we were talking to users from different countries with different accents. So it was very hard for me to understand. So I was like, just waiting for them to wrap the last idea and jump to the next question. Like I couldn't do any follow-up questions because I was not understanding. And then I had to watch all the recordings like twice to have the transcripts and process the ideas. And I have help from my PM at the moment. She was awesome. She helped me a lot. But what I actually learned there, that it's a great research skill to be to have English as your second language or to interview in a second language, because you are being so careful that the person understands the question, that they speak slow, and you have sometimes you need to check that you're understanding their ideas correctly. So they express more carefully. They are more mindful of the things they are saying. And I found, yes, now I think of that as a strength, you know?
No, I think that's great. I think it's like, I am a native English speaker, but when I talk to a lot of people from everywhere, and when I talk to people with like stronger accents, it's interesting because I focus on them so much more because I want to make sure I understand everything. So it's kind of like the flip of you, but a similar thing is like, if I talk to someone that's native English, I'd like half the words, I just like listen because I know, and I probably forget stuff. But if I'm listening to someone where their accent is like not what I'm norm, like I'm used to listening to, I feel like I focus so much more on everything they're saying. And I feel like I gather that feedback in such a different way. Just interesting.
Yes. Yeah, it became a superpower.
It became a superpower. I love it. I love it. Awesome. Well, I guess my final question for you was like, where do you see yourself going in the next few years? Like, where do you see your trajectory? What are things that you're really passionate about that you want to learn more about and get into?
Oh, that's such a hard question.
It is.
Yes. I've been thinking of that lately. I'm maybe in the short term or mid term looking for more, for engage more with the community, like trying to speak out more, have my own point of view on things, share ideas with the community. That's one aspect I'd like to develop a bit more. I'm an introvert, and sometimes that part is hard for me. It's not that everyone has to, it's not that I don't have to do it, but I was a teacher at university for 7 years, and that was an aspect of my identity that I'm missing lately.
Yeah.
So I think I will look for something like that, some teaching and learning opportunities or mentorships, something like that.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, this is definitely, but being on a podcast is definitely one way to talk about your opinions and kind of start that process of, yeah, getting out there, mentoring. We are going to have listeners that have hearing your stories, and it will be inspired in their own design careers. So I love that for you. I think that makes sense.
I hope so, that they get inspired. That will be awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. This was a really great conversation. Thank you for all of the deep thinking and design thinking conversations. It was really, really fascinating to like kind of take apart what design means from like the very basic. So yeah, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to following your journey and where you're going to go next and the mentorships you're going to take on from here. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Diane.